This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Harry Dent. Harry is the founder of Dent Research, an economic forecasting firm specializing in demographic trends. He's been the author of many books, most of which I've read, The Great Boom Ahead, The Great Depression Ahead, Demographic Cliff, and the most recent one, The Sale of a Lifetime, How the Great Bubble Burst of 2017 to 2019 Can Make You Rich. Harry, welcome back.
Yeah, nice to be back.
Okay, we had just touched on real estate, and you know, it's the following, let's say, that we have on this radio show is really, I mean, we're up to our eyeballs in it. We think we're pretty well placed. And in California, you know, we've watched the financing change to where, I mean, the bulk of it is all really people that had to put 20% down and got fixed loans and have reasonable loan to value payments. And so a shock within the industry doesn't feel very threatening to me. But when you're saying $100 trillion could disappear, that's completely out of our hands. So what you're saying to me is, you think that this next event, whatever kicks it off, is going to cause a lot of unemployment?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And again, bubbles to burst again in everything, stocks, real estate. I mean, and I used to say, Bruce, you know, years ago, oh, oil's going to go down to $10 to $20 a barrel and commodities are going to collapse, you know, 70, 80%. People said, oh, Harry, that's impossible. No, that's what bubbles do. Bubbles get so exaggerated by overly optimistic expectations, easy finance and stuff, that when they burst, they don't burst. They don't correct 20, 30, 40%. They correct, you know, 40 to 50% in real estate, and they correct 80% or higher in commodities and stocks. And so, again, we had real estate go through a big downturn from 2006 into 2012. But, you know, all this quantitative easing and free money. I mean, everybody's gotten a free gift here on mortgages, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And I can tell you, I mean, I follow charts a lot. So what you're saying is I'm speaking in front of a lot of people, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the dichotomy of these two charts. The default rate is soaring and the trustee sale, the final foreclosure process, is tanking. So we're going up geometrically in the defaults, and we're declining in foreclosures. Those two numbers can't go together, except
exactly,
for government intervention. So you're right. It completely didn't crash the way it should have.
And so we'll do that. And again, in this new book, I show, like, bubbles are not black swans. They build predictably, exponentially, faster than fundamental trends when they go. And then when they crash, they go back to around where the bubble started, not the last bear market low, you know, way back in stocks or bonds or real estate. They go back to where the bubble started to diverge from reality. And again, for stocks, I marked that point as late 1994 when the Dow was 3,800. I marked that for real estate, which does not have as big a downside as stocks. But again, it's more leverage with mortgages. I marked that as January of 2000. And in different parts of the world, it might be 1998 or a little bit different. But look at what your real estate was worth in California or anywhere in January of 2000. And people will be shocked to see it's a lot lower than it is right now.
Just to kind of give some numbers to that, we had a downturn in California from a mild one, 90 to 96, went back up from 97 to, when, say, 2000. My guess is we were about 200 median price. In 2000 and whatever the bottom was, we were at 245.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we thought, well, that was devastating. We came from 600 to 245. It seemed like our industry had a Great Depression. If nobody else joined, we felt it. So we have to endure another one of those, but not for the same reasons as what you're saying.
Right, right. And you know, if, again, if you look around the country, The biggest bubbles last time around were in, like Las Vegas and Phoenix and Miami, even more than California. And those crashed the most because of that. But this time around, they didn't bubble as much. And a large part of California has bubbled more than most areas. And now new areas have bubbled, like Denver and Dallas, that didn't bubble before. So, you know, again, that's why this book is all about, look, especially in real estate, bubbles are much more varied given supply and demand in local areas and regions. So you have to look at your bubble. Hey, Omaha didn't bubble, so it won't burst much. But, hey, parts of California did bubble again, and now Denver and Dallas, places like Dallas and Houston, because of the fracking boom and stuff, have bubbled more than they did before. So all real estate is where there's the greatest opportunities for investors because, unlike stocks that tend to go up and down together, real estate has much greater variety in the bubbles and the burst, and therefore you can make more money by saying, oh, here's where it's overpriced and here's where it's going to be the most valuable. And I always tell people, no matter how much we see a bubble burst, California real estate in places like New York and Manhattan are always going to be worth more than Omaha in Kansas and other places. So when the bubbles do burst in places like California, you're going to get the greatest bargain, the greatest sale of a lifetime.
Well, if that happens, I will try to be on the right side of that. We seem to have a playbook in place. So we have this big problem in 08, and the solution was we just create money.
Yeah.
And now we
pave it over with free money. You say, oh, we don't have a crisis here, a debt bubble. We're just going to create free money and create what I call a bridge over troubled water. I'm telling you, Bruce, that never, ever happens in history. That you can't. You have to let a bubble burst, and it's going to be painful, but the bursting of the bubble reduces the cost of business and living again, like the 1930s, and creates the next boom. It's part of what it takes to create a boom after a bubble. So we shouldn't be saying, oh, we can't let this bubble burst. We should just be having governments encourage the bubble burst and helping to restructure debt against real estate. Think about this. If instead of what happened with free money and quantitative easing in 2008-09, what if the banks had been forced to write down real estate loans to businesses and consumers against that bubble and relieve people of debt? That would have been a positive for the economy. It would have been bad for the banks and the investors and bondholders and banks and all this stuff, but it would have been a positive for the consumers and businesses, which drive 80% of economic growth. And that's what happened in the Great Depression. Yes, we had high unemployment, bank failures, but basically financial assets collapsed and loans were restructured and written off, taking a huge burden off of people and businesses. That's what needs to happen. You know, we have to take our medicine and say, yeah, we had a bubble. Yeah, we borrowed too much. Banks went too much. Real estate went up 2.5 times in 6 years from what it should have been valued at the same income for people. And we just need to have a reset and go on, lick our wounds, and grow again. Well, we didn't do that. We took the easy way out. Oh, we're going to print $13 trillion globally and $3.5 trillion in the U.S. to cover up a debt crisis. And now we have another real estate bubble, and I tell you, stocks have bubbled much more than real estate this time around. People should worry the most about their investments in stocks.
When it seems like, and I was surprised the way they handled foreclosures in the 90s, there was actually, that was when California had a downturn. We went down maybe 4% a year for 6 years in a row. So that was our total hit, 24%. But there was actually a year where the government or Fannie Freddie came out with this memo saying that if somebody's behind by 100 days, that you had to initiate foreclosure because the lenders were dragging their feet. In this cycle, they didn't have to send a memo out. They just didn't foreclose. And that's why it's interesting in what you said, Nevada. Nevada, I think, was the worst hit, like you said. Something like 70% of the people were upside down by so much. If the lenders had foreclosed, it would have been a 20 cents on the dollar event. So they didn't foreclose and they didn't kick anybody out. What they created was a housing shortage. If you go to there now, they're building more homes than they are in Riverside, California by a long shot, because there was a housing shortage, but no one could move out of the home they had. It's the strangest thing. I guess my point of, sometimes I think people learn by what they did and they think it's successful. So they have a playbook now. So why do you think the playbook won't play out again to the next level of debt? What will prevent that?
Well, I mean, I think the same thing's going to happen again. It's just going to be a little deeper this time because the unemployment's going to be higher. The economic downturn is going to be stronger. Again, because governments decided to not have the next Great Depression. I mean, 2008 in the economy was just like 1930, and we could have gone down for another few years. Real estate would have gone down 40, 50% instead of, you know, 34%, and stocks would have gone down 80% instead of, you know, 55%. We would have had a bigger washout, and it would have all happened largely then. Well, government stopped that. So now we got to go back and revisit that, because you can't go from winter to spring without, you know, a big freeze over and thaw, and we just didn't let it happen. So
why do you think we'll let it happen this time? I guess, why do you think we'll let it happen this time? And I'm not saying we shouldn't or shouldn't, but I'm saying it seems like they have a playbook that they have faith in that says, okay, we can prevent this by sending up more debt or helicopter money or whatever it is they think is good.
Well, I mean, but because it fails. Like, what's happening to mortgage rates right now? They're going up. We predicted this a year ago, that you know, this whole bond bubble of pushing interest rates down artificially, especially long-term interest rates, would reverse because everybody would pile into this trade and it would go one way, and then something would start to go wrong, like Trump getting elected and a little bit higher inflation rates and other things, which we all predicted. And now rates are going up. Well, hey. What, okay, mortgage rates were 3, 3.5. Well, what happens when they're 4.5, 5 or higher in a real estate market that's already overbought and only coming back because of artificially low mortgage rates? So that's what happens. You don't get something for nothing. And we've gotten something for nothing now for years and years in bubbles. And now with free money, and money that is, when you adjust for inflation, zero or even negative in cost in many countries and sectors, you can't grow with something for nothing policies. And that's what governments have done. And I don't understand, to me, a 10-year-old could understand that you don't get something for nothing, and free money is not good for the markets, even though it makes everybody feel high near term. But when people get high, like any crack addict, they make what? Bad decisions. They buy real estate they shouldn't buy. They get more house for their money than they should get. Everybody overinvests. You get a bubble, and then it collapses, and it returns back to reality like a crack addict going through detox. That's the way we look at the economy.
If we have this cycle that we really have problems like you're suggesting, what are interest rates likely to be in that phase?
Well, ultimately, they're going to be lower.
Okay.
That's good for real estate down the line. What's happening now is interest rates are being forced back up to normal levels. You know, a 10-year treasury bond should be 2% or 3%. You know, actually 3 to 4%, where it's been, you know, 1.5 to 2% recently. And so when rates go back up, they're just resetting, and then that brings real estate back to more realistic prices.
How do you reset?
They're going to go down, because when the economy declines and asset prices go down and real estate and stuff, we're going to see deflation in prices and mortgage rates. I'm telling you, I could see a 10-year treasury at 1% or lower in the years ahead, and mortgage rates at 3% or lower, and likely lower. And that's going to make a decline in real estate prices even more profitable, because you'll be able to borrow even lower against that. And people don't see that, but that's deflation. And it's a good thing. Deflation lowers the cost of living and investing in real estate and financial assets. And it's a good thing long term, but it is very painful when you get that reset and stock prices collapse, real estate prices collapse, you know, mortgage loan rates collapse at first. It's a negative thing at first, but in the long term, it's a gift from God. If everything's cheaper.
You know, somewhere in the last year, I was looking at charts, and I have a friend that I respect a lot, and I didn't want to say anything publicly without running it by him. But I said, I want you to read this. And so I told him, I don't think we're fighting inflation anymore. I think we're trying to prevent deflation. And yeah. I said, honestly, I think we're going to see a 2% mortgage rate. And yeah. I don't know the time frame, but it seems like that's, when I look at all the charts, how do you have 4.5% unemployment and 1.5% GDP growth, and a 10-year T-bill at the time was 1.6? Those two charts have never coincided.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. And I would give you a time frame that you're going to see the lowest mortgage rates in a lifetime, just like the sale of a lifetime on every other metric, between like 2020 and 2022 or 23, like. Yes, they're going to. I think you could see a 2% 30-year mortgage. I mean,
yeah,
that's a gift from God.
Well, especially to somebody who joined the real estate in 81 and refied their house so they could be an investor at 17 and a half. Yeah. Anything under 5 to me is a gift.
Yeah.
Got about 7 minutes left, and there's another whole different category that I found very interesting. I was watching. Do a lot of study and reading and so forth. And there was this concept of disruption. And there was a gentleman that did a presentation about electric cars and solar and so forth. I just want your impression about the speed of change that might come to, let's say, an oil industry, because all of a sudden you can buy an electric car for exactly the same price, only everything thereafter costs a lot less. Do you see that happening in the next few years to an industry that thinks they're fine?
Well, you know, two things on that, and I'm going to say two opposite things at once.
Okay.
All of economic progress and evolution has been about things becoming radically cheaper. You know, automobiles were only affordable to the very rich in 1900, and by 1965, everybody had one or two of them in their garage. And they were unbelievably affordable, and that's what technology does. But that happens in surges. And I listen to a lot of gee whiz technology futurists saying, oh, my God, you know, we're going to lift 120 and stuff. Yes, we will at some point, but not in the near future. We have just seen, I have my newest cycle in my research over the last 30 years, is a 45-year technology cycle where, hey, there's always innovation, but it's when those innovations like automobiles and electricity move mainstream together, or the internet and broadband and personal computing and wireless phones move mainstream, that's when it has the biggest impact on the economy. And that's a 45-year cycle, like a clock. Steamships peaked 1875, railroads 1920, automobiles 1965 in the economy, and now the internet. And we have peaked, and we're not going to see. Biotech is a huge potential. Nanotechnology is an even more huge potential. these things are not going to hit by this cycle, our economy mainstream, until the early 2030s. I'm going to be damn near dead by then. So, you know, we've seen a massive productivity revolution, and technologies are more about, Facebook, dancing dogs and cats and stuff. It's entertainment, but it's not like Google and email. But I'm telling you, Bruce, my productivity and research in my research, economic research business, tripled or quadrupled because of email and Google, and me being able to find stuff quicker, faster, with less people. I have one half a research assistant now. I used to have three full-time research assistants to do what I do. So I think that technologies and the gee whiz stuff they're telling us, it's going to be less than people think. It's still going to grow and innovate, but it's not going to be like we saw between 1988 and 2010 in the last positive technology cycle. And when we do get to the next one between 2032 and 2055, again, when I'll be dead, we are going to live to be 100, 120, and it's going to change everything about life and demographics. And that's what happens. Technologies change exponentially our standard of living over time, but they also do it in cycles, and we are no longer in a positive technology cycle. And even Moore's Law, the doubling of technology chips, every 2 years, is fading faster than the speed of light. So people are overly optimistic, I think, about technology right now.
Okay. We've only got a couple minutes left. It sounds like you actually enjoy doing your research yourself.
Yeah, and especially from Puerto Rico. I do my same research with a better view. You can't believe the view I have from my condo here. And I got an even better view on my island house in Culebra.
There's probably some tax benefits to being there.
You know what? I did not move here for the tax benefits. I heard about them. But when I got here, I would have had to create 5 new employees to qualify. I didn't even think that was possible. A guy tells me, oh, we got a company that you can be a consultant in, and you get the tax benefits. So I am going to get some tax benefits, but I didn't move here for that. I moved here because I loved it.
Okay. Well, I really like that you do your own research, here's why. Because I do the same thing, and I know exactly what the benefit is. You, with your experience, can have an aha moment way before somebody else would, just by compiling data. You see something special.
No, that's true. And one of the best books I read in a long time was Outliers by...
I read it.
Yeah.
Outliers,
When he said, it's 10,000 hours you submerge yourself into, that's exactly what I did in the 1980s, part-time while I was a consultant. And I started having one breakthrough after the next from 1988 on, because I submerged myself into demographics and economic cycles enough to master it and get some major insights. And now the insights just come easily. They just, I don't even have to think about it. One comes after the next because I did that submersion.
Yeah.
And that's what people need to do. Like you're an expert in real estate. I'm an expert in demographic trends and cycles, and people need to listen to the people that have done that homework and immersed themselves into those areas of knowledge. And that's who you listen to, because most people don't know what they're talking about. They just follow the trends and they go up and down. No, somebody who really gets into the trends will understand what's happening, and other people will not. Unfortunately, it's a small percentage of people.
And like you, though, I would want them to make their own decision and be responsible for those decisions. Harry, we've run out of time. I always enjoy talking with you, and thank you again for all the time you spent trying to get good at what you do and sharing it with the rest of us. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.